Welcome to East Meets West, episode 215. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
And we are going to talk about the fact that 215 is an area code in Pennsylvania for the entire show today.
Yes. Why not?
What part of Pennsylvania?
What other great things can we find in Pennsylvania? It's Philadelphia, I think.
It is. It's just a Philadelphia area code. Well, not just, but it's not like some weird corner or something. Like the 217 area code, which is Springfield, Champaign, Urbana, and Sorrento, Illinois.
We'll get there in two more episodes.
215 is Philly Metro, actually. Yeah. You know, I think we may have mentioned this on the show before, but the area codes were chosen to make it easy to dial the larger areas. So you would get a 2 and a 1 often in high priority places like New York or Washington, D.C., or Pennsylvania, not too far off, 215, because it was easier to dial. So 212 being pretty much the easiest area code to dial, given that they reserved any 100 level area codes. You always started the area code with at least two, if not a higher number.
So, but that doesn't apply to the Western United States.
Well, what happened was the Western United States was considered low priority, except for Los Angeles. And so they all got the 700s and the 800s. San Francisco got 415 is not bad. It's not too far.
And 650, yeah. But ironically,
650
enough,
came later.
It did, because they were running out of 415 numbers to give out.
And then and you'll see that a lot in the metro areas now, where they'll have like 707 or 710 or, you know, these kinds of things, because now it doesn't matter with push buttons whether you give somebody a 7 or an 8. It doesn't actually make it harder to dial.
But Central Valley's 209, which, are you implying that the Central Valley has a higher...
Central Valley was given a medium priority area code with a 2, but you got a 9 at the end. So you're kind of, you know, half and half.
All right. What else do we find in Philadelphia? Find the Liberty Bell and some other stuff.
Cheese steak.
Oh, a Scrapple.
Scrapple, yeah. I had some Scrapple the other day here in Berkeley. In the Bay Area, it was all right. Yeah, it wasn't a bad Scrapple. I mean, things like that just aren't the same outside of their native region. But it was a fair approximation.
I think it's because they reuse the same grease that they've been cooking in for the past 100 years.
Yeah, and there's something about, you know, the water or the local food that they use. Migas, for instance, in Austin, Texas, you cannot replicate. I've had Migas here in the Bay Area. I've had Migas elsewhere
in the world. Define what Migas is for people
Migas,
like me.
Migas is eggs, cheese, salsa, tortilla strips, all kind of in a tasty melange. A lot of times it's chorizo sausage as well. And it's just in a nice big
sounds
mix.
Like an omelet.
It's not an omelet though, because the eggs are scrambled.
But so they aren't cooked in the eggs, like an omelet. So it's literally just scrambled eggs, and when you're done, you throw it in with the rest of the ingredients,
with the cheese and the sour cream and the
sounds like a lazy huevos rancheros.
It is kind of, well, it's kind of like huevos rancheros. Huevos rancheros is very close. It's just scrambled eggs instead of fried egg. Yeah. Nothing lazy. It's actually harder because you have to scramble the eggs. Huevos Rancheros is lazy because
how hard is it to scramble eggs?
Well, it's harder than a fried egg. You know, all you have to do is flip the fry. You don't even have to flip it if it's sunny side.
Yeah, but you don't want to break the yolk. It's hard. It's easier to make scrambled eggs.
I will grant you that there is more skill involved in a Huevos Rancheros in not breaking the egg. That's a good point.
God, I'm hungry.
I know. It totally makes you hungry talking about all this great breakfast food. So anyway, Philadelphia, Scrapple.
Check
large
out the
population of Italian Americans.
Do people say that? Like, you know,
I don't know. I'm reading that on Wikipedia right now.
Oh.
The area, along with most of Pennsylvania, has also has a very large population of Italian Americans. Okay.
Does that mean I get like pasta with my breakfast?
I guess so. I guess that implies you might have some good Italian restaurants there.
That's cool. I did not see any when I was there. Of course, I was sightseeing with my cousin at the time, and it was like 50, and I wanted to get back to the safety of New Jersey.
New Jersey. Why is it that people pick on New Jersey so much?
Because it's so easy.
It has become the butt of the joke without a reason anymore. I mean, there are many worse areas than New Jersey. There are many more suburban, generic areas in this country than New Jersey. Is it just that it's close to New York, and so it's the one all the comedians in New York make fun of because they know
it? I think it's just a historical a punching bag. So as you progress, I mean, eventually, you know, people make fun of parts of Southern California, like, but people who've never been to, like, you know, Oxnard or Fireball or whatever, some armpit in California, would have no reference. But you can always use Jersey because everyone makes fun of Jersey.
Everybody knows that joke, even if they've never been to Jersey. Yeah, that's true. It is more of what's the word? Not icon, but totem. Oh shoot,
cliche.
No, cliche. But yeah, it's more of the template rather than the truth.
Interesting about New Jersey, other than the fact that everything was really built up and very urban and industrial, was the fact that you can't pump your own gas, which is, I guess, the law there. It's like in Oregon, you cannot go outside and pump your own gas.
Is that because they don't want spillage? That's usually the reason I've heard against allowing back in the 80s when they started to do self-serve gas stations for the first time, there was a lot of complaints about, oh, well, people will spill the gas and it'll cause fumes and it's a danger and it pollutes the air.
As opposed to when the guy spills the gas and pollutes the air.
Yeah, but at least you can fire that guy. I mean, the person self-serving, you have no quality control whatsoever.
But they've designed the pumps, so they're a lot more, you know, idiot. I shouldn't say idiot proof. I've seen some pretty big idiots.
Archetype. That was the word I was looking for. Archetype. Jersey is the archetype
of everything wrong with America.
Of you know, an easy to make fun of secondary area. I've also noticed too that a lot of times, these kind of areas that you make fun of or that seem to exist in a certain region, of which New Jersey is an exception. Most of the time, the high crime, lower class,
the poor areas,
looked down upon area. A lot of times the poor areas too are on the east side, right? There's East St. Louis. There's Oakland over here in the east. There's Brooklyn and Queens, which used to have that reputation. There's East L.A. But New Jersey.
East Palo Alto.
There you go. East Palo Alto. A lot of times they're to the east, but not Jersey. Jersey's bucking the trend.
Or maybe it started the trend and everyone bucked that.
And that also goes with another thing I've talked about on East Meets West, which is the weirdness of the South always having the reputation of being slow, lazy people, and the North being kind of stuck-up, snotty people, no matter where you are. Whether you're in England or Mexico or India, whatever situation you are in, north of you, the people are like uptight and snotty, and south of you, they're slow and lazy.
I think wherever
you are is always fine. What's that?
I think it's an equatorial thing. I mean, like, you know, there's the whole political social belief that the countries in the northern hemisphere, which tend to be industrialized countries, versus, you know, the more agrarian, you know, higher poverty level, you know, countries that are in the southern hemisphere. And, you know, they say it's because the way the maps are drawn and everyone in the southern hemisphere has a complex or given a complex.
But that's just the same trend writ large across the earth. Because
exactly.
If you take a country that's entirely within one hemisphere, you'll still have that, like, oh, yeah, the people in the southern part of our country are like this and the people in the northern country are
we
like
do that here in California. Everyone rags, or at least in San Francisco. It's funny, in the Bay Area, especially in San Francisco, everyone rags on L.A. or at least Southern California. But I very rarely hear the opposite when I'm down there.
Oh yeah, that's true. They really couldn't care less about us in San Francisco.
And well, it's funny because, you know, a lot of people who do the nagging and the bitching tend to be, you know, transplants, people who, you know, have maybe lived here 3, 4, 5 years, but is that enough time to have kind of a complex about a specific region in the state?
Two things there. One is when you move somewhere, sometimes you adopt local customs rather enthusiastically in order to fit in. So, you know, becoming like a Dodgers hater and a Giants fan in order to sort of fit in. And the other thing is, I think a lot of people who move to San Francisco come from New York City, and they're used to being the, you know, top dog. And all of a sudden they think, hey, wait a minute, San Francisco is great. It's very similar to New York City in some ways, and LA is not. And so how dare you think yourself superior to San Francisco? So I think I get that more from New Yorkers sometimes.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I've noticed in the past 10 years that the city of San Francisco, unlike when I was growing up here as a kid, has been really broken down into various component neighborhoods that are maybe like 4 blocks by 4 blocks. And I find it very peculiar, because I've always considered San Francisco too small to kind of have that, you know, that mindset that larger metropolitan, you know, cities have, because they have the distance, right?
Right. You, historically, in San Francisco, you have neighborhoods like the Richmond, which is a quarter of the city, or the Sunset. And then downtown, you have some, you know, North Beach and Chinatown, which are a little smaller historically. But you're saying that things are starting to break up even in within those historically larger neighborhoods.
Hayes Valley, stuff like that. And it's just, you know, it seems... It seems part cultural, like people are kind of bringing a neighborhood mindset, like, you know, this is my domain and I'm going to put a flag and call it whatever. And I think it's very much a realtor.
Yeah.
Where, you know, they need to sell something and they want to give a location a very posh, a very kind of trendy image. So they spin out a name, you know, like the Tenderloin and Knob Hill. And then there's that area.
Tender Knob.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so grating to me, because it's so, I don't know, it's so silly.
Well, I lived in one of those neighborhoods in Oakland. It was called Adams Point. In every real estate listing, every apartment listing, Adams Point was the neighborhood that I was going to move into. When I moved there, I found out that almost nobody calls it Adams Point. There's not a single sign anywhere that says anything about Adams Point. Nobody knows what Adams is or where the point is. It's near Grand Lake. It's near Grand Avenue. It's Lake Merritt. If you're going to call it something, you say, oh, I live near Lake Merritt. They'll say, what side? And you say, oh, on the Grand Avenue side. Oh, okay, I know where you are. But you say Adams Point, I'd say 75% of the people are like, where's that? Never heard of it. So it's one of those made up names to describe a certain location within a historically larger neighborhood. It is a big trend.
Do you have any of those peculiar conventions, naming conventions up in your new spot?
I think San Rafael is just, first of all, they pronounce it Rafael, even though it's Raphael. And second of all, they don't really have those divisions in neighborhoods. Neighborhoods are fairly large and usually based around developments, because most of its growth happened post-60s. So you've got the little downtown San Rafael area, and then the developments are they were created by developers, and so they're very distinct. And if you name something, people will know, like, oh, I know exactly where that neighborhood is. There's not a lot of confusion about that. There's not a lot of made up names, except they were made up in the beginning, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think the population's dense enough for that. I mean, maybe in some areas, but I don't know. I mean, generally, like, you know, you group people by what city. Oh, you're from the South Bay, you're in Hayward, or you're in Fremont, or you're in San Jose, or you're Santa Clara. Or you're in the North Bay, or you're up in like in Marin Headlands, or, you know, you're near the Delta, or you're on the peninsula. And it's things like that I understand, but I find it really jarring when people talk about, okay, so let me give you an anecdote. A while ago, I was talking to my girlfriend, and she was relating a story. Her friend was relating a story to us in a bar where she was, She was coming out of the bar, and as she was coming up toward the front to go through the door, there was a voice out of the background of the bar that said, go back to the marina, which is kind of odd, because this woman was totally dressed in flannel jeans and very much the, you know, protest anarchist type, and nothing that approaching the tax bracket that someone in the marina would need to have. And it, it was kind of funny because we kind of talked about it. It's like, who in the hell would say go back to the marina? The city is exactly almost 49 square miles. And there isn't enough distance. I mean, you would literally take a bus to get to school from one end of the city to the other, because that's the way the city shipped out kids. And it's, if you were growing up here, you would never even think about that, because you've been, you know, north, south, east, west on both sides, because you had to. And that's kind of when I decided that it was very much a transplant or an outside, you know, concept brought into the city, because it was something that never existed when I was a kid.
Yeah, chat room's pointing out that the north-south thing we're talking about has a few exceptions. Canada, for one, where everyone lives in a thin, habitable strip along the United States border, and then a large
within 100 miles of the U.S. border.
Large portions of the country north are very sparsely populated and extraordinarily cold during the winter. And then the United Kingdom. Or especially England, let's say, not the entire United Kingdom, but England, where London is in the south, and it's the people up north in Northumbria that get the reputation of being the slow farming types.
Actually, I think Australia is like that too, because Queensland is north, but Sydney and all the kind of cosmopolitan cities, Melbourne, are on the south side of the continent. And of course, you have Perth, which is all the way on the west. So it's, yeah, I can see, you know, I can see that being very much being the reverse, where you have the northerners being the kind of hicks in the sticks, and the southerner are more of the sophisticated, intellectual, cosmopolitan types.
I think it's an accident of London becoming the big town, and there being in the south, you kind of have to have the south be the more urbane area, because there is no other city even close to London in England. There's other big cities, but London by far dominates the landscape, because it's the seat of the government, and it's the largest by far population.
Well, it's interesting that you said it's an accident, though. I mean, why do you think it's an accident that it became the largest city?
Well, I'm saying it's an accident of geography that you get the flip-flop. I don't think it's an accident. I don't know why. It's an accident of geography in that London happens to be an encampment.
On a major waterway. And
yeah, it's on the Thames, which is a tidal waterway, so it's easy to get stuff in and out to. It's where the Romans camped once. So, you know, it wasn't the most important city in Roman Britain, but, you know, it later became the most important city, simply because it was easy to get to and easy to defend. It was far enough inland that it wasn't subject to an easy invasion, but you could ship things in and out of it. At least, I'm sure somebody, and I asked somebody to go to subreddit.com/EMW and make a clearer and more detailed explanation if you can, because I'd like to know more about that too. But as far as I understand, that's how it got that way. Did you see Inception this weekend, Roger?
Yes, I did see Inception. I was going in with a very, a neutral view, because it looked very intriguing based on the trailers and all the hype that's been built up around it. At the same time, I wasn't really sure what it was about. So in my mind, it could have been an incredible train wreck or a brilliant masterpiece, which it ended up being the latter, thankfully. But I really enjoyed it. It was a pretty straightforward plot. I was coming in thinking that it would be some really hyper complicated, overly convoluted, sometimes contrived, areas of the story. But it was relatively straightforward. But what made it? See, I don't want to.
There will not be any spoilers. People who are threatening our lives and leaving the chat room. There, we promise we will not spoil this movie. I will say that I read one reviewer who said it's actually rather difficult to spoil this movie, because it's a lot more about the experience of getting through the story than it is any single thing that happens. It's not like M. Night Shyamalan's, like, oh, if you know the truth about Bruce Willis's character, it's going to ruin the movie for you. There isn't anything like that. That said, we have a no spoilers policy, and we will stick to that here, because I know people don't want to know those details. We're not going to tell you the ending of the movie. We're not going to tell you any of the like super salient points. But I agree with you, Roger. It's complex but direct in its plot, and I think that's one thing that that it explains why you have like 75, I think it's got like an 89% on Rotten Tomatoes. And then you get people like the Wall Street Journal and New York Times trashing the movie, saying that it's rather shallow. And I think it's because you have this system of this technology set up that is really mind, it hurts your mind a little to try to figure out like, okay, so-and-so is dreaming, but this is happening from somebody else. And I got to keep track of which parts are coming from what characters. But once you get past that, once you kind of learn the mechanics, everything is very direct. Everything is very, it fits together so nicely that it's almost easy once you've gotten over that hump, once you've met that learning curve.
Well, what's interesting is the movie's paced really well. It's very much like Nolan's Dark Knight. There isn't a moment where you're just kind of left to kind of ponder and think, even for a few minutes. There's always some bit of plot motion or new information being brought. So you're constantly, you know, you're never really, you know, you're sitting there twiddling your thumbs, which I find, you know, fantastic, because a lot of movies will slow down if maybe to draw that emotional tension or something between two characters. But here it was very much, you know, everything that you were exposed to revealed a little more of the puzzle or kind of the entire scope of the world, which is kind of cool. And, you know, I would have to say that I think I liked pretty much everyone that was in it. I didn't think anyone was miscast or misused in any way. I mean, I had my doubts about Leo DiCaprio, but I said he did a great job.
Yeah, Ellen Page also knocked it out of the park, as far as I'm concerned, and did her career a huge boost by showing,
yes,
I am not just the stereotype kind of bitchy, funny teen character that you have seen me as so
far. I'm not
far.
The indie girl.
Yeah, I am not just indie rock girl. I can handle a serious role and do it well. Also, guy from 500 Days of Summer. What's that? I always forget that guy's name. He's got a hyphenated name or something. But he was fantastic as well. And Ken Watanabe was,
yes,
everybody, like you said, was brilliant. There were, I found, a few plot holes, not a lot, and definitely not the kind of plot holes that ruin the movie for you. But
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
The Rock and the Sun. See, that's the only thing, though, is every time I see him, no matter what he's in or whether he's hosting an SNL, being in a movie, or just, you know, being a cameo person, he always reminds me of Third Rock from the Sun. I think that was the only thing that was a little jarring at times. But I mean, that's more of a personal thing on my end.
But did you agree that there's a few plot holes there? They're not disastrous. They're not fatal. You can overlook them. And I feel picky even thinking about them, because the movie is so good that these wouldn't even be noticed in most movies. But there's a couple places where I'm just like, for instance, this is not a spoiler. There is a portion where they are in gear that frankly looks like it's from Hoth in The Empire Strikes Back. And it's really hard to tell who's who. And so for that portion of the movie, I was a little not lost, not because of the complexity of the plot, but because I'm like, well, wait, where is so-and-so? Like, is that him? I can't even tell. Everybody looks alike. But
I don't think that's a plot point. I think maybe that's more of a stylistic issue you have that made it difficult to tell.
It's a plot difficulty because I can't follow the plot. But yeah, I see what you're saying. The other whole...
Actually, you know, it's funny. When you mentioned that scene, I know what scene you're talking about. I did not think of Hoth at all from Star Wars. I actually thought of Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2.
Oh, yeah, that too. That too. Although...
game.
I swear Christopher Nolan has Ellen Page dressed like Leia on purpose. Eileen mentioned that, and I was like, you know, I think you're right. It's almost...
She was in a slave dress?
No,
tied around
that's in Tatooine. That's not on Hoth. Get your mythology straight. Listen, Roger... No, and the other plot point I'm not sure I can discuss without spoiling, but it's near the end of the movie, and it has to.
No. See, I don't think that's a plot. I think that was done on purpose in order to.
Well, you don't know what I'm talking about yet. So, I'm talking about the part with Watanabe's character, and why he's one age, and Leonardo DiCaprio's character is a different age. I'm not seeing why
that's actually explained in the movie. So I don't want to say too much because
that's not explained in the movie because they were both in the same area.
No. Well, they arrived at that area at different times. So just remember that much.
Did they?
Yes.
Okay, that could explain it. That could explain it. I'll grant you that.
So we're like dancing around, making sure we don't like unloose the floodgates of.
That is not a huge spoiler. Fresh Premise is like, that's a huge spoiler. That's not a huge spoiler.
You know what would be a big spoiler?
The only way that could be a spoiler is if you've already seen the movie, which makes it not a spoiler because you've already seen the movie. Otherwise, you're like, what the hell is he talking about?
Yeah, exactly. You know, with the juicy fruit and the double mint gum. Jeez.
Yes, exactly.
You think, people could be looking for that in the movie.
All right. We got two comments on East Meets West 214, where we discussed moving, packing, conferencing, dining, and lots of other stuff. One was from SoCal Jess, who is going to be headed to Comic-Con. And wanted to know if we were planning any East Meets West meetups. And we haven't yet, although I'm supposed to be doing New Brew Thursday on Saturday afternoon at a pub. So I'm thinking maybe Saturday evening I could do some kind of combined TNT, Sword and Laser, East Meets Westy kind of meetup.
Maybe. I mean, I'm still looking over at the event list. Still have to hit up Ron for all the after party or the after show stuff parties. I so want to go to the Entertainment Weekly Sci-Fi party because that's where all the celebrities are, but it's closed to outsiders. Invites only. Bastards.
Also, Cool B says looking forward to possibly saying hi to both you in San Diego. So pretty much the same thing. But we will be at Comic-Con. Now, I don't think we'll be able to do an East Meets West next week, at least not live.
No, I will be coming back. My plane lands at 6 here.
Yeah, I'm checking my calendar right now, and I'm landing. Oh, well, no problem. I'm landing at 4:50. So I'll just, hop right off the plane. Yes, no East Meets West live next Sunday. We might do one recorded. We'll see.
Yeah. We could totally do one.
Because it would be fun to do a brief one, you and I, just audio only, where we kind of chat about Comic-Con and our, our immediate impressions.
It'd be kind of cool if we could get a couch and sit down on it and maybe get some brews and have an audience right there in front of us.
Why do you want us to be imitating Dignation suddenly?
Fine. We'll be in the audience and the audience can be on stage in a giant couch. All five of them.
That sounds good. Maybe we'll record something at Comic-Con. I'll have my laptop.
That's cool. I can bring my headset.
Yeah.
If I remember to bring my headset. Yes.
You could Skype in while sitting next to me.
Like we did from Dragon Con.
That's right. That is what we did at Dragon Con last year. All right. Any last words, Mr. Chang, before we wrap this baby up?
No,
in
but
swaddling clothes of podcastiness.
Seriously, check out Inception if you haven't already. I still want to watch The Sorcerer's Apprentice. I know it kind of got panned by the reviewers, but it seems kind of cool. And anything based on a musical thingy with Mickey Mouse and the walking.
If you're watching the live version of East Meets West, do not believe any of the spoilers that are purportedly being made in the chat room. They are hilarious if you've seen the movie. They do not spoil the movie in any way.
Yeah. But yeah, watch the movie. You'll enjoy it. Just make sure you're awake. It's not one of those things you want to be half awake for and then kind of wake up in the middle.
I have to disagree with that. I was a little sleepy from a hard day of unpacking. And we went to see it, and I thought I was going to have a problem, but the complexity of it actually perked me up, made me awake, made me pay attention and concentrate more. And
forced you to think?
Yeah, I definitely did. This is a thinker's movie. If you don't like thinking, or if you're like, I'm not in the mood to I want to see an escape movie where, I don't have to think a lot, it's the wrong movie for you. Inception is definitely
I will say this, Inception, and this is not a spoiler, so anyone who has their fingers plugged in their ears, you can remove them. Inception, in many ways, is a kind of a you'll notice it in the movie that it's basically, maybe it might be a spoiler. Any case, you'll notice that there are a lot of themes that run in other movies with a similar kind of plot, if a different direction. And kind of an Ocean's 11 or style where you have a bunch of people planning out something. But I want to go too far into it.
If you would like to make comments, your thoughts about Inception, your thoughts about regionalism, why not go over to our website? We have it there for just such occasions. Subbrilliant.com/EMW is the place where you can not only make comments, but you can make comments on other people's comments and start a whole thread. You can start a whole show. You can record your own podcast and link to it from your comment. It's
you can call
it a whole world within the comments.
You could have a podcast called EMW Comments.
You could very well do that thing, that very thing. East Meets West is brought to you every Sunday on the Twit Network at live.twit.tv. We broadcast at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. Thank you, Roger, as always.
Sure. It's great to be part of the show.
Thanks to Leo for letting us do it on the network. And thanks to Jammer B for producing and making all the recording and knobby and video things happen. We'll see you next time.
Bye.